In January 1956, I arrived in New Zealand with my parents. And we had the task of settling in this strange land. And some of it was easy, and some of it was a bit more difficult. The first thing we had to contend with was all these people who spoke with a strange accent. We lived in Christchurch, and it was interesting to live in a place that was so flat. And I suppose it was that sense of spaciousness that appealed to us too. We also had to come to grips, and very well, with this thing that they called a weekend, where shops closed at 9 o'clock on Friday night and opened again at 9 o'clock on Monday morning. And you had a whole weekend free. Except we didn't quite have that because my father was working on the Princess Margaret Hospital and they worked on Saturday mornings. But we had this weekend and we set up a ritual with another family that we knew who'd come to New Zealand from the same town as us the year before. And every Saturday night, we would go to the pictures with them and then go back to their place for supper. And then they would start talking and remembering. And the stories, because my father and Andy, the other husband, had gone to school together. And so the stories and the comments and the experiences and letters from home were all shared. And sometimes we didn't get home till 1 o'clock in the morning, which meant that we had a big sleep-in on Sunday morning, and we'd get up late, have a late breakfast, and then it was time at midday for the request session on 3ZB. Who remembers the request session on 3ZB? Yep. Somebody had given us an old radio, and we could only get 3ZB on it. And I listened to that, I enjoyed the music. And at 1 o'clock, between 1 o'clock and 10 past 1 or 1:15, they always had requests for more classical music. And one Sunday, I heard a piece of music that really stopped me in my tracks. I'd never experienced such an emotional response to a piece of music. And this is what the music was.
Thank you.
I had no idea what the music was. All I knew was that it touched me at an emotional level that I'd never experienced before. Over the next few months, I discovered that it was from an opera by Verdi, that the opera's name was Nabucco, and that the piece was entitled The Chorus of Hebrew Slaves. And I thought, oh, I know about that. At least I think I did. I learned about that in primary school in Scotland when they were down in Egypt. You know, Moses and the bulrushes and making bricks without straw and all the plagues and getting out of Egypt. And it wasn't for another 10 years until I was doing biblical studies in Knox that I discovered that I was in the wrong story. And it wasn't about the slaves in Egypt, it was about the exiles in Babylon. And about 800 years separated the two events and quite a lot of distance in miles. Can we have the map up? Here we are. You can see down. It's not very big, is it? Anyway, that red line is the road from Jerusalem to Babylon. And in 597, and before the Common Era, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, was a bit frustrated with Israel because they were siding with Egypt against him. And so he marched round there in 597, and he attacked Israel and took off some hostages, trying to make the people of Israel toe the line as far as he was concerned. And these first lot of exiles went off in 597. But the king in Israel didn't play ball, and so Nebuchadnezzar came back and did a better job in 586. He gathered up all the leadership in Israel and marched them off into exile in Babylon. The king, all the highfalutin ones were taken off, and the ordinary people were left behind. And they were left behind to a mess, because he not only took all these people away, he destroyed the temple and he burned Jerusalem to the ground. And so the people were left. There was no infrastructure left, no leadership. The ones who went off into Babylon weren't exactly slaves. They were given a place to stay and they were free to move around a bit, but they were put out. They were sad, and the song that we just heard expresses that sadness as they, by the rivers of Babylon, they cried out for their homeland. And it's at this time that what we now have as Psalm 137 was produced, and Gillian's going to read that for us now. Listen carefully, listen to the emotive words, listen to the variety of emotions within it.
Psalm 137. By the waters of Babylon, we sat down and wept when we remembered Zion. As for our lyres, we hung them up on the willows that grow in that land. For there our captors asked for a song, our tormentors called for mirth. Sing us one of the songs of Zion. How shall we sing the Lord's song in a strange land? If I forget you, O Jerusalem, let my right hand forget its skill. Let my tongue cleave to the roof of my mouth if I do not remember you, if I set not Jerusalem above my highest joy. Remember, O Lord, against the people of Edom, the day of Jerusalem, how they said, down with it, even to the ground. O daughter of Babylon, doomed to destruction, happy the one who repays you for all you have done to us, who takes your little ones and dashes them against the rock.
It's pretty bold stuff, and in some versions, it's part of Psalm 137 about bashing babies' heads on rocks and things. But that was the depth of feeling they had in being in exile. But what did that mean for them? Well, they looked back and they saw that the temple was gone. So the very heart of their religious life had been destroyed. The city had been burned. the beautiful city that they had grown up in, that they loved, destroyed. The king was exiled. The leading citizens had been deported. They were all there. And public life, as they had known it in Jerusalem, had disappeared. The whole structure of what they had been used to, gone. And for ancient Israel, it was the end of several things. It was the end of privilege. They went off into exile, and the privileges that they had had in terms of social standing and religious standing were gone. It was the end of certitude. Nothing was certain anymore. Who could you trust? Where were we going? What was going to happen? It was the end of domination, where they had, in their social structures, dominion over other people. It was the end of visible public institutions, and it was the end of a sustaining social fabric. So grim words, and they might seem familiar as we think about our own world. What were they going to do in those circumstances? How were they going to deal with this emergency that had no ending? How were they going to cope with exile in a strange land? One of the things that affected them most was their loss of identity. In Israel, they knew who they were, and they had all the institutions and the structures to bolster that. But here in Babylon, they were a minority group in a multicultural society. They had no more privileges. They couldn't expect anything. And with the loss of the temple, how were they going to worship? Well, several things happened over the following years. Little things to begin with that grew in small groups. Maybe just a couple of families or three families, or for initial support and for sessions where they could mourn about what was happening to them. But there were also groups for comfort. And in those groups, they did what my family and the Baxters did. They told stories. They remembered. They remembered the old stories from the tradition. They remembered better times, and they looked forward to the future. And out of that developed the synagogue. They found another way of worshiping. In Jerusalem, the worship had centered on the temple. The central acts in the temple were acts of sacrifice. They had no temple. There was no sacrifice done. They told stories. And so the whole religious life changed from being a people whose religion was based in sacrifice to one whose religion was based in story. They knew from their oral tradition, and they kept telling the stories because out of those stories came signs of hope for them. And out of that came the development of their scripture. But that took time. It didn't happen overnight. They also had to come to terms with living in this strange land. And so they had to find work. They had to work with the locals. And some of them worked so well with the locals that they married them. They became a bit more integrated into the society, but they still had the problem of how do you keep your identity in a multicultural society. And it was the synagogue that helped them to do it. A whole new way of being religious, so to speak. They did one or two other things, and that was that they developed the concept of Sabbath. Now, sometimes when we hear the word Sabbath, we think of Presbyterian Sabbath. But what they developed in exile was something that was much more positive. One day in seven, they stopped. They stopped work. They gathered in the synagogue to hear the stories and to reinforce their origins. And then they looked after their relationships with their families, with their friends. It was a time to celebrate and to have time together that was positive. One of the other things they did in that society was to take notice of the new science. Babylon was a cultured place. They took enough notice of the new science to write a new creation story. And chapter 1 in Genesis comes out of this period and reflects the science of the time. It's not science as we know it. It's poetry, but the poetry reflects a new way of looking at the world and the creation. 50 years later, the Babylonians were overrun by the Persians, and Cyrus said they could go home. And so they began to trickle back to Israel. When you think about it, 50 years had passed. Most of the ones who went back had been born in Babylon. A lot of the ones who had left had died. And this is where you have to listen carefully. Because all the changes that they had made in Babylon that gave them some hope and some new life, when they went back to Israel, they forgot them. And they tried to go back to where they had been or where their families had been 50 years before. They tried to turn the clock back, and they became very conservative, very exclusive, and shut themselves up. They forgot about being good neighbors. They forgot about hospitality. And over time, they became a very exclusive and narrow group. But also during that time, they were invaded several times. But it gives us some understanding that when this conservative and reinstatement of temple and the other structures had happened, these were the very things in the New Testament that we see Jesus opposing. There's a message in there somewhere for us. But I'm going to ask Gillian to read from a section from Romans that Paul is reinforcing something that they had forgotten, and that was the need for community and to love one another.
Owe no one anything except to love one another, for the one who loves another has fulfilled the law. The commandments: you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not covet, and any other commandment are summed up in this word: love your neighbor as yourself. Love does no wrong to a neighbor, therefore love is the fulfilling of the law.
What they discovered in Babylon was the importance of a community that cared. They were able to build that community around their religious life and around their social life. And that when that disappeared, then the society crumbled. One of the things that Jesus was very clear about was the importance of relationships and community, caring communities that looked after one another. So where is this leading? Well, it seems to me that we're at a crisis point in our life, both as a church and as a nation. We have to make some decisions over the next little time, because we cannot go back. There's no going back to what we've had. Too much has changed, and we need to look ahead to see what kind of community we want to be. What kind of nation do we want to be? We have an opportunity to raise up the valleys and lower the hills, to get rid of the extremes of poverty and riches that are part of our country and that are not healthy for a country. During the lockdown, we've experienced here through some of the work that people like Valerie did, that keeping of connections with people, a community that cares, a community that knows its own roots, a community that values people. And to see the value that economy is not primarily about finance. The word economy comes from the Greek word meaning house. An economy is about running a household. And so business is part of that, but good health, good education, good housing, good relationships are all part of that economy that needs to be rebuilt. I came across some words by a man from the Iona community who can say things much better than I can, and Gillian's going to read those words.
Our contemporary reading is from Norman Shanks. He has a countercultural vision and an eagerness to celebrate. The church vocation in each and every locality is to be a worshipping, healing, learning, serving community, faithfully living by the values of the kingdom, modelling and embodying a countercultural vision, looking and reaching out beyond itself with a wider vision to discover the light and love of God, an engagement with the life of the world, standing up and speaking out against all that diminishes and disempowers humanity. In so doing, it will dream and explore. It will be open, flexible, and ready to take risks. It will be generous, hospitable, and ready to celebrate. It will not be a ghetto, but keen to cooperate and engage. It will be a transforming community, influencing others for good and being transformed itself in the process. It will be resilient and persistent, however hard the way, and it will be marked by joy and an eagerness to celebrate. Our response for the word in Scripture, for the word among us, for the word within us, we give thanks.
I'm inviting you now to just sit and think about some of the things you heard, and there may be some new insights, there may be questions, it may have evoked some memories for you. And while you're doing that, Mark's going to play some reflective music.